As promised, we are joined by a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. He is host of the Full 48 podcast and, again, a friend of the program. He's back for more. Howard Beck, great to have you. Howard, how are you?
Good, Romy. How are you doing?
Great. Howard, you and I have been talking, but I got to reset this really quickly. You have covered this league for a long time in New York, here in Los Angeles. You and I have talked about this league for a long time. Have you ever seen a summer, though, like this one with relation to the NBA?
Yeah, it's funny, Jim. We try not to be a prisoner of the moment, right? And you know, everything feels like the biggest thing we've ever seen at that moment. And you don't want to be hyperbolic. And you know me, I'm more of a nuanced guy. But no, we've never seen anything like this. This was insane. The pure volume of elite players changing teams, the way that some of them changed teams, the surprises along the way, like Paul George, things we couldn't even see coming, quickness with which it all happened, especially in the first hours of free agency on June 30th, when the floodgates just opened and hundreds of millions of dollars of deals were done within hours. It was just, you know, dizzying. So no, every way you slice this, this is new. This is unprecedented. It's dizzying. I don't know if this is a sign of more to come, and this is the new normal. I tend to think this is a little bit more of a blip, but there are aspects of it that are indications that things have changed.
We're talking to Howard Beck. Now, Howard, when you look at how the summer has played out and some of the larger themes, which I will touch on in a minute because you touch on them in a piece for Bleacher Report, I'll get to that. But were you at all surprised to see Kawhi Leonard agree to a shorter deal with the Clippers?
I mean, if we had all thought it through, I guess it's really not that surprising. I mean, there's two aspects of that decision. One is that the way the NBA's CBA is structured, max contracts are different for different years of service. So 1 through 6 years is an X number for your max, and 7 through 9 is a different number, and 10 plus years in the league is the highest max. So he's setting himself up to sign a bigger max in a couple of years. That's a smart business decision. We've seen other guys take short deals in order to take full advantage of the system. And we're living in a time where NBA players can afford to, quote-unquote, leave money on the table, at least guaranteed money, the long-term security, because the money is so staggering now that signing a shorter deal where, okay, you've locked in fewer years, you could have a career-ending injury, those risks don't seem as big of a deal when you've already pocketed over $100 million. And that's where these guys are now. So we see them take risks that a previous generation never would have taken. The other piece, of course, is none of us could have foreseen that Paul George was going to end up on the Clippers with him, and it makes sense also to line up Kawhi's contract with when Paul George will be in free agency, just because it gives them both every option in the world at that time. Doesn't mean they're not going to both stay with the Clippers for the long term. Just means that if you're Kawhi, what if things go a certain way? What if Paul George decided to leave? You leave your options open. And you just give yourself the leverage, too, which, you know, we saw LeBron do that repeatedly in Cleveland on those one-year deals.
All right, so star players like a LeBron or a Kawhi, they've got the hammer. They've got that leverage. And now you've got a piece up on Bleacher Report, and you make the point that if you're running an NBA team, you can do everything right, and none of it's going to matter. Lay that out for me. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's funny because, you know, even a few months ago, I'd written a story when you and I discussed it, I think, about the Clippers and the Nets and how they were doing everything right. They set themselves up perfectly for this free agency period to score big, and they both, as it happens, they both did. And it was a matter of smart management, smart cap management, great front offices, great coaches, and building a foundation that made themselves inviting, right? So the Clippers and the Nets, you could say, did everything right to get Kawhi and Paul George, to get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And so we praise them for doing that. Wow, smart management, smart, you know, great job setting yourselves up, and you were rewarded, you earned it. That's fine. The Toronto Raptors and the Golden State Warriors also did basically everything right. In fact, were the two teams in the finals vying for the championship, and Kawhi Leonard won the championship, and he still left. So it was kind of the point of that you can do everything right and get the guys, you can do everything right and lose the guys. And it just creates this this dynamic in the NBA now where if you're an owner, if you're a GM, you almost have to just throw up your hands. I mean, you should still strive to do everything right to get the guy, to keep the guy, but you have to know at the end of the day, none of it may matter. And that was the thing that was something that, you know, an agent had said to me, basically nothing matters. Guys are just going to go where they want to go, whether it's to play with friends, whether it's to be in a city that they like better, whether it's to play closer to home, whatever it may be. And this is the other kind of sobering, I think, reality, Jim, is that in the past in the NBA, if you're a GM and you're trying to build a sustainable team, the two things that you can do to keep a guy, to make a guy want to stay, contend for titles, pay him the most money, and through bird rights you had that ability. Well, bird rights are just irrelevant now. Guys are willing to leave money on the table, and a bunch of them just did. And obviously championship contention isn't enough either. Even in Jimmy Butler's case, he not only left money on the table leaving Philly for Miami, but he left a contender for a non-contender. So again, nothing matters.
Howard Beck joining us. There are so many interesting things to pull out of that answer. But in the case of Jimmy Butler, why do you think he did that? Why, if you're Jimmy Butler at that age and that juncture of your career and you've got a chance to play for a title, why would you leave for a team that does not have as good a look at it, arguably, and leave money on the table?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I guess, you know, you could say to an extent, Jimmy didn't choose to get traded from Chicago to Minnesota, and he didn't choose to get traded from Minnesota to Philly. And this was a case where he was finally a free agent who had a choice, who could decide his own destiny, and that's a running theme with a lot of these guys. So there's that piece. Then there's was he really that happy there? And I'm not convinced that he was. I think that Jimmy did a really good job of fitting in, I think much more so than people realize. You know, there was the early flare-ups and, you know, him going at Brett Brown, that kind of stuff. But we didn't hear a peep out of Jimmy Butler or any complaints for the last couple of months there, and he did exactly what they needed him to do, which was be that clutch player who could make the big shots late in games, who could create. That's not something Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid could do at the level that Jimmy Butler does. And so he played the role that they needed him to play. But that team has some strange dynamics. Those two young guys, in Simmons and Embiid, the dynamic between them, the dynamics around them, it's, you know, I just been hearing rumblings going into free agency that Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris both had some concerns about chemistry there, and that one or both were going to leave. But you always figured that with one left, the Sixers were going to do everything possible to keep the other, and that's how it played out.
We're talking to Howard Beck. Howard, go back to your other point. Like, the point being that teams can do everything right and it still might not matter. That Toronto did everything right and it didn't matter. Golden State did everything right and it didn't necessarily matter. That said, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks and you're watching all this play out, how worried are you when it comes to Giannis and his future?
I think you could probably answer this both ways. You should be super worried because you've seen how this goes. You've seen all these guys leave. And we've seen especially guys leave smaller markets for larger markets. Now, the way Giannis is built as an international player who grew up in Greece and who I don't think has the kind of, he's not looking at the Hollywood lights and thinking I need to be part of that or the Broadway lights. That's not how he's constructed. And I don't think they're worried about the big market, small market thing or the glamour market thing where he's going to be, you know, drawn by any of those things, the off-the-court stuff. But you've seen so much movement that how can you not be concerned? Everybody, no matter what their background, their personality, their career path, everybody seems to leave at some point. And so you should be worried. On the flip side of it is the Bucks are doing a lot of things right. Again, doing everything right might not matter, but they're doing a lot of things right. They've built a really good team around him, but they don't have that second star. And even though the era of the super team may be over, we don't have any teams with three or four stars right now. We got a lot with two. The Bucks have one. All due respect to Chris Middleton, who made the All-Star team and who's a very, very good player. He's not at the level of, you know, when you're talking about the LeBron-AD pairing or the Kawhi-Paul George pairing or some of the others around the league. Giannis doesn't have that second guy who is a top 15 player year in, year out. And will that matter? I don't know. I mean, they've got a really good cast around him. But they did fall short this past season. I think if they make the finals, you figure they're probably fine. On the other hand, the Raptors won a championship, and Kawhi left anyway. We'll keep coming back to that.
Right. I mean, all bets are off because of that. And again, I made the point, Howard, that he didn't owe them anything. He didn't owe them anything, and they did everything right. It just didn't work out. Last thought then. So the Lakers obviously wanted Kawhi badly. They didn't get him, but they did get Anthony Davis, so it's not like the Lakers came up empty. What's it, though, say about the Knicks that they did pretty much come up empty?
Yeah, and it's interesting because it was all four teams in the big markets, both L.A. teams, both New York teams, all had max room and an ability for double max room in a few of them. The Knicks had double max, and they were the only ones who came out with nothing. It's an indication that there's a lot of things wrapped up in that, Jim, and I could go on for hours about the Knicks, as you know, and I'll try not to. But I think that, one, it is an indication that the Knicks did not build correctly. They did not have a foundation there the way that, say, the Nets and the Clippers did, or that the Lakers had with LeBron. The Lakers didn't even need a foundation. They had LeBron. And the Clippers and Nets had foundations of young, solid teams where a star could come in on day one and know they could win. The Knicks did not have that. They had a 17-win team with a lot of young, unproven guys and some vets who were, you know, just irrelevant, essentially. They couldn't present the right look. And they were still – they were using a plan from 10 years ago, basically, where you just clear the decks and say, well, we're the Knicks, we're New York, we're a big market, the stars will come. Things have changed. Guys want to win immediately, and they didn't have the template for that. And look, they do have a reputation. Charles Oakley was quoted in the New York Times last week saying, listen, I talk to players around the league all the time, and players around the league have a lot of reverence for Charles Oakley. They don't like the look of him being ejected from, dragged out of the Garden, and then – you know, a year later, you've got, or 2 years later, whatever it's been, Dolan, the owner, ejecting a fan for having the gall to say sell the team. I mean, there's a reputation the Knicks have now that is so negative, and it is affecting the way players are making decisions. I can't speak to every single star who turned them down and why, but there is an overall impression of them that is certainly hurting them when it comes to trying to draw the top players.
Howard Beck is a senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. He is the host of the Full 48 podcast and coming in here and doing what he does. Howard, great job. Always good to talk to you, and I appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thanks, man.
Good job, bud. Howard Beck, great job.